Hey, you're listening to Migration Patterns, a podcast that explores the places we come from, where we live, and what takes us there. I'm your host, Meredith Bratland. In this episode, I sit down with Herman Villegas, a Chilean Edmontonian. He moved here when he was 7, but in the last few years, he's been sensing a shift in his identity. In this episode, Herman and I discuss his experience moving to Edmonton, the Chilean music scene, and his podcast, where he discusses the different views of masculinity in the modern world. In the beginning of this episode, I absolutely slaughtered pronouncing his name for the first time, and I left it in here so you guys could have a laugh at me. Let's get to it.
Hi, and welcome to Migration Patterns. I'm Meredith, and I'm here with Herman Villegas?
Villegas.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And he is a podcaster here in Edmonton for the Modern Manhood podcast. And then professionally, you're a mental health youth worker.
Yes, yeah. I'm a mental health youth worker. I work out of 3 junior highs over in Sherwood Park, and I do a lot of mental health work around that, and also other stuff for the county. So, yeah. I came here in 1988. I even remember that day. Like it was. Oh, it's actually coming up. I was like, thinking of that. It's February 29th, 1988. So it was a leap year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So today, today's February 28th. So it's like.
Yes.
Like the almost the 30th anniversary of when I came.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, how old were you?
I was 7 at the time. Yeah. When I came here,
also,
yeah.
So you can probably remember quite a bit.
I do remember quite a bit of that, yeah.
Was it cold?
Yes. I remember, that's the, it was February, so it was really cold. And this is not, this is, before we thought about global warming, so it was more cold.
Yeah.
I remember my first snowfall, actually. That's one of the days that I remember pretty clearly. It's like, I remember some of my past in Chile, and I remember my first days in Canada. But I remember landing in an airport, in Edmonton. I remember my family waving a big Canadian flag, and I remember going to an apartment and they had all my family there. It was one of the people that were here in Canada had a big party. And I remember the snow. I remember how cold it was. I remember this is a very vivid memory of me arriving in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Because I don't have that when I was that young. Wow.
Yeah.
And so, where did you live before in Chile?
I was born. I live in Santiago. So Santiago is the capital.
Yep.
But I was born in a town called Rancagua. So it was 100 kilometers away from Santiago.
North or south?
A little bit north.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I was born, and how a lot of my family there that was born there too.
Yeah.
And my mom's side, she lived in Santiago, and so we visited, we went back and forth. But when I left Chile, I left from Rancagua. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And then your parents decided to come over here. Was there certain opportunities that they were looking at how did that come about?
Well, the way my parents explained it, because I asked my parents every now and again as to what drove them to come to Edmonton specifically, that I'm always every time there's a winter spell, I'm like, why did you pick Edmonton? the reason was because most of my family were here. My granddad moved from Chile to Edmonton originally. He was a pastor, and he moved here to try to do some missionary work.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of my family kind of followed mm-hmm. to Edmonton, and we were one of the last ones to follow to Edmonton.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my parents thought that we would stay here for 5 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But then everyone started moving back to Chile, and then we stayed.
So
it was more of it was more economics, and it was more of let's try something new, and it was more we have a good establishment in Edmonton. So it wasn't for anything and there's a big Chilean community in Edmonton.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that later.
Yeah, for sure. And, most of them came because they were refugees, or most of them came because of politics or whatnot.
Yes.
We didn't. We actually came just to try something new. And so, yeah, that's why one of the, in a nutshell, that's why the reason we came to Edmonton.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did some reading about, like, the history of Chile before this. And from what you said with the 20 years, I kind of thought it must have been the late, like, or early 1990s or somewhere in there, right? So, and then that was right at the end of
Pinochet, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then I thought, well, there was a Truth and Reconciliation report in Chile for that time.
Correct.
And I thought, oh, that's very interesting wordage, because I didn't know where that was chosen, like, for our Truth and Reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're not related, or maybe that's the common term when there's, like, cultural...
like, they're in a cultural disruption or something like that. You know, Chile went through a lot of political turmoil during the 70s and during the 80s. And, you know, Pinochet was in power for until, like, the very late 80s, almost early 90s. And, you know, there was a movie that came out a couple of years back called, it's called Yes. Yeah, I'm going to forget about that. That'll be bad of me. Anyways, and that tells a lot about, like, the history of Chile when Pinochet was leaving power, and he came out of power in a very democratic way.
Yeah.
He selfishly said, there's an election. I feel like the people would want me in power, so I'm going to give you a vote to say, do you want me still in power? And the people said no. So they elected him out, and and he died after, not for a while after that, but
because he went to Europe, right? And then they arrested him, and later he came back, but he was kind of involved in some of the, like, Senate, right?
Correct.
Of Chile, and then
he died, and it was a big thing. Like, September 11th is a different date for Chilenos.
Really?
Yeah, because that's when the coup started.
Okay.
So, in September 11th, that's the, you know, 9/11 for a lot of different people, but for Chilenos, it's a time for understanding that's when you know, the big coup happened in Chile and changed a lot of our history.
Yes.
Yeah. But our family didn't come from that.
No.
Although we did, we know some people that were part of it, and and there's a lot of political sentiment, especially in Edmonton, about that process. And that's something I'm still dealing with that too. Not
really?
Personally, like, but part of
it's
my
your
identity.
Background.
It's part of my identity. So it's an interesting part of my identity, though. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so to hop into that, because usually I start off this interview with a question's like, tell me about your home.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested which way you're going to go from how, if it's Edmonton or if it's Chile.
It's interesting to me. If you would ask me about, you know, 10 years ago, I would have said Edmonton, no problem. That's an easy answer for me.
Yeah.
And when I went back to Chile, years back, you know, people asked me that same question a lot. And it's like, if you would move back to Chile, would you? And I would say, I easily said no.
Yeah.
I said, you know, Canada's my home. Canada's a place where I belong. But now, not so much. Like,
okay.
I feel like I'm feeling a much more of a connection back to my homeland. maybe it's because, you know, like, the political upheaval that's going on in North America, specifically around immigrants, and specifically around, you know, specifically about like, quote unquote, Canadian values. And I really, really identify with being Chileno, and different ways, though, that I feel like a lot of Chilenos don't. And that's kind of a personal opinion of mine, but it's hard for me to say what's home. Like, Edmonton has been my home for many years, and I love the city, and I love Canada. But there's a part of me that's Chileno, and I can't ignore that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. So this is another on my creepy level of research.
Yeah, go on.
I heard that you really like Anthony Bourdain.
Yes, I do.
So do I.
Yeah.
And I was watching, I think, a previous season of No Reservations. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the guy, I think, from the Philippines? And Bourdain put out a call saying, like, hey, you want me to come to your country? Like, do a video. And then if you're chosen, I'll come.
Right.
And he was, born in New York. I think he was first generation American. And they chose him because he, felt this tie to the Philippines. And he wanted to explore that more. And he couldn't afford to do that on his own. So he was like, I'll apply to Bourdain. So they go. And he had a very interesting experience there because there was part where he was super excited to be there, but also nervous. Like compared to his video in the States, he was very buoyant and excited. And then he got there and he was more
reserved almost.
Yeah, reserved. Because I don't want to say withdrawn, but maybe more internal.
Yeah.
And then he would have dinner with some distant relatives there. And that was sort of an awkward experience too. And Bourdain felt it. And
I'm totally empathetic to that. I'm totally empathetic to that. I feel that I would feel the same way. And you know what? Like Chile drives me, before before my family would always go back to Chile. Like my mom just came back just from a trip to Chile.
And okay.
So they go back all the time. And a lot of my family friends and people that I know from Chile, they go out all the time. I don't go as often. The reason why is because I said to myself, I want to find all these other places. I felt like I was more of a discoverer. I went to Europe for a bit and I still want to go to different places. I identify a lot with Mexican cultures. So I want to travel to Mexico too. And when I went to university, I took a lot of South American history and because it was part of my minor. But at the same time, I didn't feel as a connection, but now I do. And now I'm feeling I really need to step back into my roots.
Right.
And I don't know how, I feel like I don't know how accepted I would be there. As a gringo.
Okay, yeah.
Because I don't know how I'd feel. I still can speak Spanish. I can read Spanish. But I know that it takes me more and more to actually do that nowadays.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I still feel this connection and root to my homeland. And when I was thinking of some thoughts of if I get a new tattoo, what am I going to get? And I did, and I got something that was very Chileno for me. And I was very close to my homeland. So I was there's something driving me there. There's something driving me there. But at the same time, if I feel if I go there, are people going to accept me as a Chileno? So I don't know that. That's the internal struggle I have with me.
Yeah. So when was the last time that you went?
I went back in 2000. So that was 17 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's been a while. Can I ask you what your tattoo is?
Oh yeah, you can see it. I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
So
describe it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So this I got this tattoo a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But a year ago. And it was the person that's on it is Bernardo O'Higgins, and he is a very prominent figure in the independence of Chile. He is one of the liberators of Chile, and he fought the Spanish. And there's a big statue of him in my hometown, and in the center square, Edmonton has Churchill Square.
Yeah.
We have a square in the middle of my town, and it's called the Square of Heroes. And there's a big statue of him, a big statue of him running away from Spaniards.
Oh, okay.
and get to that later, sure. The little Chilean identity.
Yeah.
but there's a big statue, very, very famous statue of him. And I got the tattoo because I felt like this is a connection back to my hometown. And this is a connection to somebody that, I think Bernardo O'Higgins is a pretty cool person. And I read a lot about him and the name O'Higgins is very synonymous to my hometown. So that's why. And I was like, there's something that's pulling me back. And I still feel it. And I still feel a sort of connection to my Chilean roots. But I feel that there's still kind of like a tug of war coming back from what I know of Chile and what I don't know of Chile. So it's kind of and also my Canadianism too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that it would be difficult to balance those,
right.
But do you think that there's room for both, with Edmonton having a really active Chilean community, or is it just not the same? I guess that's kind of what I want to talk to you about.
The
differences you see.
That is a good question. I don't know if I identify with the Chilenos that are here. Because a lot of them came from the political strife, or they were refugees, and my criticism of the Chilean community, even I said this before to people, is that I get that Pinochet and the coup was a big part of their life, and that was a big political problem, and a lot of people still concentrate on that. But I feel like as a community, we're stuck there. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. It was a big problem. I get that there's a truth and reconciliation part, and I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, Chile has a lot more to offer than just this 30 years of time. And I feel like I don't identify with that, with what's going on in Edmonton and what's going on with Canadian-Chilean politics or Canadian-Chilean identity.
Okay.
So I have personally kind of distanced myself from that community. But it's not like I don't blame them. I that's the thing too. I'm like, yeah, you definitely, that was a big part of that history. And it's something that everybody knows Chile about. But at the same time, I'm like, it was hard for me to find my own identity in there. And I feel like sometimes immigrants may have that problem. If they don't identify with their community, they might feel a little isolated. And that was a problem for me too. So,
yeah.
Herman has been more successful finding his identity in the current artistic scene in Chile.
And the more I look about Chile that's outside of the realm of Pinochet, like right now there's a big artistic community in Chile, and I don't feel like it's celebrated as much. There's movies and music that comes out of Chile that are really, really good and really, really vibrant and really, really independent. There's a big movement to... just like how Canada is really revolving and rallying around indigenous roots, that's the same kind of movement that's going on in Chile too. So around their Mapuche.
And I kind of read about the demographics there of how people identify themselves, and maybe that's changing from, and honestly, I read the Wikipedia, right?
No, that's fine. <it's>,
I think it was, 8? Oh, I wish I wrote this down. 42% white, and then another 42% mestizo, and then Mapuche was the third, but under 10%.
It is under 10%.
Yeah,
but it is something like the Mapuche are an important part of our identity, and they're important part of Chile, and I think we owe the Mapuche a lot, and they're one of the few indigenous groups that have kind of staked the claim in their own independence and have done things in a way that's outside of the realm of Chile themselves. And I think Chile really needs to recognize that a lot. The Mapuche were one of the few people that have resisted Spanish rule. They resisted, they fought the Spanish for 200 years.
Okay.
And they're a group that really needs to be, it really needs to be celebrated and really needs to be brought back from people that think that this is something that's not important.
Yeah.
Not saying that there isn't any recognition for Mapuche, but I feel like now people are recognizing that, and mm-hmm. it's the Mapuche flag is being waved proudly in some concerts, and you see people like embracing that. So it's the same kind of movement that I see in Canada. I feel it in Chile too. And I feel that's something that's I don't see it in the Chilean community here in Canada, but I do, when I read about Chile, I'm hearing all this stuff that's important and that's not being talked about as much. And I feel that stuff is being messed up because we're still stuck on this Pinochet thing.
And it's almost maybe different generations, right?
Yeah,
there's that generations here, and then you're, and finding your community is always a tough thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally. Community is.
it's where do I belong?
Yeah, and it was really tough for our parents too, because everyone moved back, and
they did.
Yeah. So when
are they about the only ones left from the original? Like they came kind
of one of the few left. Yeah, and really? Edmonton were just two families left in Edmonton left.
Wow.
Everyone left either back to Chile or they, some people went to Australia, some people went to Vancouver, some people went to Spain, some people went to the US.
Okay. So
it's like
all
got
over.
Spread out, but most of them went back to Chile.
And to that same small town that you're originally from, or mostly Santiago?
Santiago, they came, like most of them came from Santiago, and not many people came from Rancagua. I know my aunt still lives here, she's from Rancagua, and that's my dad's sister. So they kind of all moved back, but we stayed, and we kind of carved our own little home here, and carved our own little sense of identity too. So, and I think, I don't know, I can't speak for my sister, but I know my sister doesn't get involved with Chilean community either. So it's kind of, I think we both support ourselves in that respect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just kind of switch gears a little bit to your professional life.
Yeah, for sure.
So you came here pretty, you were seven.
Yeah.
And you're working with schools. And so I'm curious, what do you see as, is there a difference between the experience of immigrant kids compared to, Alberta-born kids? Is that, can you see that when you visit the schools? Or?
I definitely see it.
Really?
It depends on the community that I work in.
Okay.
I've worked in inner city schools. I've also worked in, schools in the north side and schools in the south side of Edmonton. Now I work in Sherwood Park, so it's a little, diversity is not their main strength, unfortunately. So it's not something, and it's getting better for them. But at the same time, if there was a Sherwood Park born kid and they see somebody that's an immigrant, it takes them a little while of trying to understand what could be insensitive for them, might be normal for them, might be normal for themselves, sorry.
Yep.
But for instance, when I was a kid, when I grew up, I lived in Millwoods, and Millwoods is a very diverse neighborhood.
Yeah. Here are so many great things about Millwoods.
Yeah.
About growing up there.
It was fantastic. A lot of people, talk smack about Millwoods sometimes.
Well,
I think back then it was more of the dangerous area. I don't want to go in there. But I grew up with friends who were, East Asians and, Indians, Pakistanis, Sri Lankans, and people from China, people from Thailand. So that was my world. I had to become very accustomed to other people who were immigrants because I had no choice. It was just the way of life. I went to Harry Ainlay High School, and Harry Ainlay was when I went there, it was very diverse too. And I had to be, for lack of a better word, I had to play along with other groups of our other ethnic groups, or else I couldn't, I would be ostracized as a high school kid. But at the same time, that wasn't a big deal for me. But I know in some kids nowadays that especially in the park, it's a lot more, it's harder for them sometimes. And it's harder to kind of identify if all they see are white kids. And if they see somebody who's a different color for them, that they get a little nervous. Yeah.
And so on your mental health work, do people, are the kids learning a lot about diversity and different cultures
I do it personally just because it's my personal interest.
Yeah.
So I make sure I try to teach inclusivity and try to teach communication skills and try to teach, what it means to be considered different, quote unquote, and what that actually entails for them, for the actual kid.
Yeah.
And, I've gotten kids that were just immigrated from they're refugees themselves, and they're struggling too to find out hey, what, so and so call me this and so and so call me this, what do I do? And sometimes the advice is it sucks sometimes. I don't have anything to say for them sometimes. I'm just I'm gonna try my best to help you out from people being racist to you, but at the same time, you got to make sure that that you're important and you're valuable, and some people are just ignorant, and that's unfortunately sometimes the world that we live in. I'm personally myself, I'm very lucky that I can pass off as somebody who's not a person of color. I'm like, I, you know, if people look at me very closely, they can say, you know, you might be Latino or something.
Right. And,
but I don't get picked out from a crowd.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have dealt with people who have been racist to me too. So it was a way of life for me too. So it's not something that's, I get it when that happens to some kids. So yeah.
Roman has an excellent podcast where he has done some fantastic interviews with men of different backgrounds about masculinity.
You know, I run a podcast called the Modern Manhood Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's my podcast baby, I would say.
I love it. Yeah. When I found it, I was so excited because I think that there's a lot. I'm interested in gender too, but kind of more on the feminine side. But then that was. My partner was starting to say, like, there's a lot of issues on the men's side too, right? Like, women have been lifting themselves up for a long time, and now there's, like, a lot of boys that don't know how to talk about their feelings and that sort of thing. And so, like, even their attendance in university is going down, and, like, these are big problems. So
those are problems, yeah.
You can't be equal without both of us. So.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, that's a topic that I try to tackle, and it's a very, very sensitive topic that I have to tackle sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How so?
Oh, just because I don't want to. The reason I do the podcast is because feminism is there. Do you know what I mean? Like I could not do it if it wasn't for the strong work and the awesome work that feminists have done. But at the same time, I want to honor them and I want to respect them to say, like, I understand and I support you and I want to be an ally.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you said, there's all these problems as well, too, that I want to be able to help out. And in a way that's inclusive and in a way that's compassionate and in a way that's empathetic.
Yeah.
So I do have to be sensitive to those plights, because also at the same time, when I say that there's problems with some male culture... I also have to say that, yes, at the same time, that you males are privileged, and it is a systemic privilege, not a personal privilege in some cases, what I would say.
Well, yeah, and there's lots of talk about that in feminism too, right?
Yeah.
Like the white woman privilege in feminism and how that's very different, and the importance of intersectionality. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's something for me that I took it upon myself, because first of all, it was more of a personal journey for me too, because I wanted to find a lot more about myself, about my own manhood.
Yeah.
And this works well too with what you're talking about with identity and immigration too, because as a Latino, I'm not, you know, there's a very macho this mentality too.
Yeah.
it's different from the North American mentality, and to say, like, when I grew up, people looked at me and was like, oh, you're from Chile, you're a Latino, okay, therefore you must know how to play soccer. Or you must be some sort of Latin lover, or you're chauvinist, or you have this kind of stereotype that might be that, like, you know, especially in Chile, actually, that things will just kind of roll off your back. Either we joke out of it, we make a joke, we get out of it, or... we have to be the providers, or we have to do some certain thing. That we have to be the leaders and the strong person. So there's kind of a little bit of chauvinistic in Latin culture too. But I'm finding more of the new generation is kind of trying to stay away from out of there, which is great.
Yeah.
So yeah, it works really great from my perspective. And living in Canada has provided me this kind of ideal to actually work on stuff like masculinity.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I do the podcast because I was more for myself, but at the same time, I wanted to show people that there are different types of males everywhere, and it's an infinite spectrum of amount of males, and also these problems around male identity and these problems around like school and these problems around like the amount of males that are in jail, or for instance, or the justice systems. This can all be solved, but we just need to look within ourselves first as males. And that's important for me. And I hated blaming people in general. I don't like it. I don't like blaming things or general and just using my anger or my, I don't want to say hate, but it was just anger or ideals outside of it. I always wanted to look within. And that's, the reason why I started the podcast is like I wanted to do something to help other males figure out that there's this is a problem within, and that there's other guys around here that are facing these same kind of things. Can we just join and just talk about this? And yeah, that's why I wanted to do the podcast. It was just kind of a broadcast.
Since Herman has heard the stories of so many people, I'm curious if he's noticed any trends in masculinity across different cultures.
From what I gather, like, there's definitely, when you talk about intersectionality is definitely with ethnic cultures too. You know, I, besides my work in mental health, I work a family violence grant with the with Strathcona County, and I don't want to get too much into my work, but at the same time, it is something that we see some sort of struggle with, like when trying to work with specific ethnic cultures, that this might be a touchy subject for them, and that's something that we have to be empathetic about too. And I don't want to come out telling people what to do or what to say, but at the same time, we have to acknowledge where their experiences are coming from. So in regards to masculinity, I do see some sort of main problems, like across the line. For instance, the provider aspect of being a guy is definitely there. There's also the aspect of, you know, being the stoic, almost. If you're not stoic, then you got to be angry, kind of aspect of masculinity. Mm-hmm. Or if you're not, you can be happy, but you can't be overly happy unless your like favorite sports team wins or something like that. It has to be an acceptable way of happiness, or else it kind of comes off a little bit different. So that part of masculinity I see across the board almost. But there's definitely different things. Like, for instance, like when I talk about my Latino culture, that is a little bit more emotional. It is a little bit more, how would say, like vibrant, or a little bit more like out there. So as Latinos, I feel that we're allowed to be a little bit more passionate. We're allowed to be a little bit louder. We're allowed to be a little bit jovial, because that is kind of that's what we're used to. We see from our parents, we see from our family. So that's something that we got the privilege to be. But at the same time, that also comes with its own set of problems. So
yeah.
It's
fascinating.
It's fascinating, and I'm curious to know, like, I'm reading a lot about indigenous cultures too, and indigenous in regards to masculinity, and see where their intersection comes from too. And I'm very curious, it's like for Asian cultures, I'm like, how, because that is considered a more reserved culture. So I want to know, like, where does their masculinity, where are their emotions are fitting? Do they still feel this kind of passionate way that some people do? But I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I've read recently that there's interesting stuff happening with Japanese men.
Yeah.
In dating, how they act at work. Maybe I saw that on your Twitter.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, where they're like, I'm not doing this work culture anymore.
Yeah.
I'm drinking after work. Like, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Work-life balance. And I thought, wow. That's a huge departure in that short amount of time.
Right, right.
And same with how women are getting more independent there, and they're having a reaction to it.
Yeah.
That's, so.
It's very interesting how a lot of people are approaching gender theory. And that's just something that I praise feminism for this. This is something, we wouldn't have these kind of conversations without this kind of, without us people talking about gender in a normal way. You know, and now we're having all these debates about what that means. So, and I'm happy to bring that debate around masculinity, but I'm also very happy to think about this in an empathetic and passionate way. And that's, I wanted that to be the theme of my podcast, but also the theme of my work that I do, so.
Back to Chilean music, because who doesn't want to hear about that?
The music that comes out of there just blows my mind. Like, and that's when I'm like, I get frustrated with the Chilean community. I'm like, why are you not talking about this? This is amazing. This is like, they have a flourishing indie indie music scene over there. And I'm like, just raise that up. It's so cool to see. Like, there's a very popular rap artist called Anna Tijoux.
Okay.
And she also started kind of like the Mapuche kind of like recognition. It was pretty cool. You know, her music was like she got put on Breaking Bad for a couple of episodes, and she made this great video about the protests that were going on around the student demonstrations in Chile, and made a song around that. And the song's fantastic. And I'm like, this is great. It's like, it's basically like listening to like a Tribe Called Red, but it like the Chilean type of thing. And I'm like,
yeah,
this is fantastic. And I'm like, why is this not happening? So I wanted to really like bring that out, and maybe someday I'll try my best to try to do it again.
Too many projects.
Too many projects. Yeah. Too many projects.
So are you planning to go anytime soon?
Probably will. Probably will. It'll be
a big trip after 17 years.
Yeah. And, you know, like I have a lot of family there too. So I have to like, but also want to visit like just Chile by myself or
yeah,
like over my fiance.
Find yours.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and just visit the place that I know and that's, you know, when you talk about home, that's also my home. So yeah. I feel Edmonton and Chile are both my home. And I don't know if I'm going to change that.
Many thanks to Herman for being on Migration Patterns. He's such a fantastic person to interview, and I highly recommend listening to his show, The Modern Manhood Podcast. Tune in for the next show where I chat with Tona from Nigeria. If you enjoy this podcast, or even like a little bit, hit the subscribe button and rate the show and share it with your friends, because I'm trying to get it off the ground. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.